the World Soccer Talk podcast. Can MLS find a way to hit their $300 million per year target for media rights? HBO Max makes a big move. Politicians are considering a big change that may impact European soccer. And we have your questions in the listener mailbag section. On the panel today, we have Kartik Krishnayar, and my name is Christopher Harris. So we're recording this on Friday, Friday morning. I think both of us are a little bit tired after watching a whole day of World Cup qualifying on Thursday, starting with AFC in Asia, going into Europe, the UEFA qualifiers, going into CONMEBOL, and then going into CONCACAF. I probably watched, I don't know, six or seven games at least on Thursday. But what we're going to do is actually going to skip through that, because obviously a lot of you are probably listening to this on the weekend or kind of early of next week, and you already know what some of the results are from some of these other games happening. There's a lot going on. But Kartik, one of the things I want to jump to is talking about a major story that happened this week in The Athletic. And they're looking at the MLS media rights deal. And this is up for bid currently. It's supposed to be finalized by the end of March. We're quickly, rapidly approaching that deadline. And this would be from 2023 onwards. There was some really revealing information in this story. What are some of the things that jumped out at you from this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of an interesting conversation between all the interactions I had at SoccerX with people and Sportel, et cetera, as well as this week, a lot of conversation around the Open Cup games. And Chris, you say you're tired from one day of World Cup qualifying, which was, I agree, intense. I've had a couple successive days of watching crazy action in the U.S. Open Cup, which is back for the first time in 3 years. So that I'm wiped out as we record this on Friday. But there's a general view now that MLS has shot for the moon and missed the mark. They are missing, as The Athletic reports, they are missing a key interest from English language partners in the League's Cup. They are also seeing a situation where ESPN is interested in acquiring the Spanish rights for the League's Cup, right? They don't see the value necessarily on the English language side. We know ESPN has made, and this was along the lines of my conversations at Sportel and SoccerX, Chris, ESPN has made a real effort to drive Spanish language dominant audiences to their ESPN Plus app. That's part of the strategy behind La Liga and some of the other properties that they've acquired. As kind of the Deportes linear side becomes less critical in their empire, they're trying to drive Spanish language audiences to the ESPN Plus app and to streaming. And if MLS is not going to provide them that option with Leagues Cup, because I'm sure Univision, Telemundo, and everyone else who broadcasts in Spanish is interested in that property, then maybe their general interest in acquiring the MLS package cools. We've also seen, not surprising to me, I thought Fox was cooling on MLS. That seems to be confirmed by what The Athletic is reporting. CBS has minimal interest, which sort of surprises me. Turner is interested, but there are complications to Turner's interest. We're going to get a little bit into the HBO Max Discovery thing in a few minutes, right, in the news section. But that would certainly impact on this. Here is the bottom line, Chris, for me. We thought in Q4, or actually in Q3, we thought MLS was going to be able to settle on a partner as soon as the Premier League rights were decided. And we saw NBC hold the Premier League rights, but not without a fight. Turner came pretty strong, right? Put in a huge bid. And CBS, ESPN, Fox also had interest. Then you've got Q1 rolls around, and you think, okay, MLS just needs to settle this. What is the U.S. Soccer Federation going to do? Their package, you're going to have a hard time shopping their package because all the broadcasters will be interested in MLS. Does the U.S. Soccer Federation, who doesn't seem to outwardly have a plan for their broadcast rights, are they going to have to wait till MLS makes their decision, MLS strikes a big deal? Well, no, actually, U.S. Soccer has made a deal with Turner now almost a month ago. Right, as we record this, and they're set up. They're set with Turner, HBO Max, HBO Max slash Discovery Plus for the next 8 years. they're good. And MLS still doesn't have a partner. And we're approaching the end of Q1. As we record this on Friday, we are less than a week from April. So I'm quite frankly alarmed by it and disappointed. I think the other thing that I want to point out, which has not been talked about a lot and was in the Athletic article but was kind of an afterthought, but this is really serious from people I talk to. And I've talked to, I would say, a half dozen people about this on background. MLS needs to be able to guarantee that they will, since they bought back the local rights, right, for the RSNs are no longer as of now, and they might have a change of heart on this because of what's going on, but the RSNs are going to be out of MLS broadcast effective in 2023, right?
Regional sports networks.
Yes. So MLS is going to have to produce those games for whatever streaming partner they sell that package to, or if it's part of a larger package. USL does this. USL has invested in a production studio here, but not far from me, in Fort Lauderdale. NWSL has done the same. You see USL actually this week launching a new venture, which is going to be based in New York, a new media venture. MLS is going to have to make a similar investment. Every USL game they produce, right? They pay for. Now, the teams are charged, but because they do it in bulk, because of the way they do it, it actually saves the team's money over if they produce the matches on their own. But there is a unified, consistent feel to every USL match that's on ESPN+. Same thing this week with the US Open Cup. Every match, the presentation was the same. We can complain a little bit about the commentators, but the presentation was the same. It was produced with a consistent level. Every production was the same. MLS is going to have to make a similar investment. Maybe they go to the same people as USL has and NWSL has, but that is an expenditure, Chris, I don't think they thought about. And that is, if you're talking about a package that's going to get you what are we thinking now? We're no longer thinking $350 or $300 million a year. If it's going to get you $200 million a year, you're probably throwing $15 or $20 million ballpark figure back into that production. Given the size of MLS, given that I think the production levels would have to be higher than they are for USL or for the US Open Cup, it's something maybe they didn't think through very thoroughly. And that's another hang up, because ESPN Plus, let's say those rights go to ESPN Plus, they are not going to pay for the production. HBO Max is not going to pay for the production. It's just like everything else. It's a studio produces it and they air your programs. The exception to this is Netflix, right? Because Netflix isn't tied to a major studio, so they've had to invest in their own stuff and create their own content. But it's like anything else in sports and in arts and entertainment. And MLS is coming up short. So I am very concerned, and I hope that I hope for the best, but I'm not surprised by the tact of the Athletic article. That kind of confirms what I had been hearing snippets of.
Yeah, this feels like MLS has really screwed this up, Kartik, because like if you look back to the fall, I was very positive. I was thinking at that time that this is a good chance for MLS to really cash in and get a lot of rights fees. So currently, as of, you mean, from the 2015 to 2022, they're getting $60 million a year for their rights. For example, the Premier League, under the current deal, the new deal that's going to start next season, they're getting roughly about $450 to $465 million a year. A huge difference. So now with this deal, back in the fall, we were looking at ESPN+, we were looking at Paramount+, we were looking at HBO Max, Apple TV+, Fubo TV, Discovery+, and probably a whole bunch of other streaming services that I'm forgetting to mention right here, that there would have been a lot of interest at that time. But then if you look back in 2021, even preceding some of the deals you mentioned, Kartik, you had the La Liga deal. So ESPN plus ESPN putting in a ton of money to get La Liga. NBC renewing its deal with the Premier League, putting a ton of money, extra money into getting that. And then you've got the, like you said, which is a big deal, U.S. soccer signing a deal with WarnerMedia, which is Turner Sports, for the rights to the U.S. men's national team and the U.S. women's national team starting next year. Now where we're at, Kartik, it's a mess, because if the U.S. men's national team deal and women's national team deal was linked still with Major League Soccer, I think we'd be talking big money. We'd be talking, okay, how big is this deal? But because they've been delinked, The MLS deal, I don't know. I mean, so there's a lot of things to this, though, Kartik. If you go through the different, on the English language side, so NBC has no interest at all. They used to have MLS coverage in the past. They did a really good job. But I think MLS really burnt their bridges with NBC at that time, asking for more money. And NBC saying, like, well, you mean the proof's in the pudding. The numbers are not what it is. And you're asking for too much. We're out. So, and there's other things involved in that too, but NBC's out. Fox, surprisingly to me, is not that interested in it. They still might come in and get and bid and get something, but like people like Rob Stone and Alexi Lalas and John Strong and Stu Holden are so intertwined with MLS. It's hard to imagine those guys not having MLS games to cover because they've been so much MLS fanboys, you mean, for lack of a better word, for years, that it's hard to imagine Fox not being interested. But money-wise, business-wise, it doesn't make a lot of sense if Fox is putting most of the money into the World Cup and these other big competitions. ESPN, I'm surprised. I'm surprised that they are interested, but perhaps maybe they see an opportunity, like you said, Kartik, in getting both the Spanish language and the English language and really kind of getting into that Spanish language market by having rights to MLS, which also would include the English language if they go for it. And then CBS, I mean, they've got a lot of coverage. I mean, they've got so much coverage already. Maybe they look at the numbers and go, I mean, it's not really the TV ratings. It's really not going to generate a lot of new signups for Paramount Plus. So on the English language sides, MLS is in a situation where instead of this new deal, which is what, Leagues Cup, you got the MLS rights, you got the local rights, you got MLS Next Pro, you've got a whole bunch of stuff that they've thrown together into this big, huge package. Maybe they would have been better off, Kartik, of just keeping the things the same the way they were before, which would have been just, national rights and then selling off the local rights and streaming rights. Because all the changes that they've made, I don't see any, it doesn't seem to be that it's going to be generating tons and tons more money. And it does have issues such as the production side of things.
Yeah, the RSNs as an entity seem to be dying off, which I think may have been part of this thought process, and they want to get ahead of the curve on buying back their rights and putting it entirely on a streaming package. But maybe this wasn't really well thought out. Here's the other thing I want to mention. ESPN, because they've cooled on MLS in general, and yeah, it is sort of surprising they're still interested, given some of the things we had heard in the last couple of years about ESPN's dissatisfaction with the ratings and the numbers and the consistency of ratings, right? They're one-off MLS matches that have eye-popping numbers, and then it reverts back to form more consistently than not. But I think they have a lot of leverage in terms of the Spanish language rights. They could effectively tell MLS we're walking away if we don't get a piece or all of the Spanish language side. Now, what does MLS do in that circumstance? I think they need to still carve out a national Spanish language package for Univision or Telemundo. More probably Univision, given its ownership, now that Televisa is the majority owner, and for DUDNA purposes, and then also just for keeping political relationships as they are with the biggest broadcaster in Mexico. But maybe they carve out 40 matches or something from the package, give that to Univision and to DUDNA, and the rest end up on streaming in Spanish on ESPN Plus. I think that's one potential solution to this. And that keeps ESPN interested in the English language side as well. But it's a hard place to be because Fox has been a really good partner for MLS, but they're moving in a different direction. I think their acquisition of the Euros maybe Fox didn't expect to acquire the Euros, but their acquisition of the Euros is now between Euros and World Cup, assuming they keep Copa America, whether they do or not, maybe it doesn't matter now. They've got just about – and Women's World Cup, they've got just about every summer covered for the foreseeable future, right? So MLS becomes less of a need for them. They have Major League Baseball, which runs along the same calendar as Major League Soccer. They have a growing presence in college football and college basketball, which intersects with MLS at critical times. So –
Hey, Kartik. I think personally, I think actually MLS needs Fox more than Fox needs MLS.
Yeah, I agree. Because right. Fox is more committed to the way they broadcast MLS than ESPN is, right? And in promoting it and being very preachy about MLS. Whereas ESPN covers MLS like they cover any other property, which is why I personally love ESPN so much, Chris. It's because they may be the rights holders, but that doesn't mean they're in the tank for the property. Whereas I would argue some other broadcasters tend to be more partial to kind of giving corporate propaganda for the rights they hold.
Well, the other thing about this, though, too, Kartik, is that in terms of like MLS needing Fox more than Fox needs MLS, is because you look back at the last, basically 5 or 7 years, and you look at what Fox has done to help MLS. So they've had a lot of games over the air television, and they've had a lot of games that have been doubleheaders. So if you go back to the 2015 days, I think it was they would have games, an MLS game right after a FA Cup final that was on Fox. These days, it's been a lot of, under the current deal, would have been maybe a U.S. men's national team game or something else happening that they would have a doubleheader or it'd lead into an NFL broadcast. Or there's a lot of different things. So MLS not having Fox in this next deal means lower ratings because there's less over the air big games on a Saturday afternoon. Like you look at this season alone, the first couple of weeks of the season, you have MLS games live in prime time on over the air television, and that's something that maybe an ABC couldn't provide. So you lose at Fox and you lose a huge amount in the TV ratings side. And at the heart of it though, Kartik, what's your take? What's at the heart of it? Why is there so little interest on the English language side for MLS? What is the reason?
I think it's the cost. You're not seeing the return on investment. And again, okay, I Chris, it feels like every other podcast we do, I have to mention this because people come after our website and have come after this podcast accusing us of being unfair to MLS and saying that you're judging them by a false standard. No, we want the product to succeed. I think it's critically important MLS do well for U.S. soccer, although I think with some of the recent moves USL has made, they may occupy some of that space. But Chris, the point remains, we are only judging MLS by what we understand based on multiple years of cultivating sources and reporting. They have promised the broadcast partners that they have currently and had promised broadcast partners that they had negotiated with, including NBC, since you mentioned NBC's MLS relationship, in the past. We are judging them by the numbers and the projected growth they internally talked about. And they are not there in 2022, where they promised they'd be in 2022 privately to Fox, ESPN, to NBC when they were negotiating, renegotiating in 2014 and NBC pulled out and that ended kind of acrimoniously. They are not there. Now, is that the fault of MLS? I don't know. Is it all the excuses we get always from people? Oh, it's because of the time slots. Oh, it's because of the Euro snobs. Oh, it's because of this, that. Maybe all of that is true. Maybe it's correct. Maybe ESPN puts too much more into promoting college sports and promoting La Liga when they got it than they do into MLS. Maybe there is some grand conspiracy. But the bottom line remains they are not at the level in terms of television viewership and general intensity of interest. I think there are casually more MLS fans in this country than a lot of soccer people give them credit for. I think casually they're more MLS fans than Premier League fans. I know you and I disagree on that. But the Premier League will consistently get higher ratings because the intensity and commitment of the Premier League fan base is much higher in this country. MLS lacks that intensity and commitment, and they haven't met their own internal projections and goals for that. And the broadcasters know that. You can have one debate on Twitter where there are a lot of angry people who are MLS fans who think we're being unfair, but you can't pull the wool over the eyes of big media companies who have been talked to for years with certain goals and have done certain market research and have also other properties that are performing better. So that's the reason. Like you, I am surprised ESPN seems to be going to the wire and probably will retain the property. I thought they were going to opt out too. Because they're not that pleased with the numbers that they've seen, but that's why I think they have the leverage to go to MLS and say, hey, give us at least a piece of the Spanish language rights, and then we're good for another 7 years or whatever, however long the package is.
Yeah, I think if the viewing numbers for Major League Soccer were that good, we wouldn't be having this conversation, because the broadcasters would look at the numbers and go, okay, hey, there's a ton of people watching Major League Soccer. But that's not the case. And for me personally, it's a decent league. I've grown to appreciate the league more and have watched more of the league in the last, say, 5 years. And it's a decent league. But the issue is competition. The issue is it's not the best soccer league. So when you look, if you had to rank it in terms of the best soccer leagues in the world, maybe it's number 5 or 6, I mean, roughly speaking, in terms of quality that you're watching. So if it's ranked number 5 or number 6, and then at the same time, MLS is competing against, I mean, college basketball, NBA, against NFL, college football, the season doesn't do it any favors either. So what you have is, on a local product, if you live in Atlanta and you go to Atlanta United games, or you live in Seattle or Portland and you go to those local games, it's a great night out. It's a great entertainment. But if you live in the United States of America and you don't have a local team near you, what's the benefit of tuning in to watch LA Galaxy against, NYCFC? What's the attraction? Are there star players? Are there a lot of American stars playing in those games? Is the quality of entertainment and excitement really high? And it's not really. I mean, it's okay. It's decent. But it's lacking the stars. Most of the major U.S. stars now are playing in Europe. And there's so many options and viewing options that we have to choose from. You mean in terms of leagues that are more accessible? This past week, Chris Moore on worldsoccertalk.com wrote a story about which leagues are the most expensive to watch. And he took into consideration how much it would cost to get a streaming package and a cable or satellite package to subscribe to watch these games. One of the most expensive, the most expensive league to watch is Liga MX. Yes, some of the games are on over-the-air television, but a lot of the games, if you want to watch them, you have to get kind of a streaming package to get Tudo NA Extra and so on and so forth. The second most expensive league to watch is Major League Soccer. You need to have ESPN Plus, you need to have ESPN2, you need to have Fox, you need to have Univision for some of the games, you might have to get Tudo NA Extra. So having all these rights partners actually makes the experience of being an MLS fan more expensive. And that's the thing, though, too. At the end of the day, at the heart of the matter, it's a decent league, but MLS shooting, I mean, they can shoot for $300 million a year, but there's no way they're getting
that. I'm gonna jump in here and say there is someone who is a prominent person in soccer management in this country, who's worked in MLS, who's worked in USL, who's worked in both those leagues, who told me privately the other day, MLS should probably just cut ties with all these broadcasters and give Amazon some sort of deal, take the loss, get everything on Amazon Prime, and that. His view was that then use Amazon's new facility in Washington to hire talent in Northern Virginia, and then kind of build back from there. It was when he said it to me on the phone, I thought that's ridiculous. But then I realized, you know, it may make sense. Maybe this is, given this reality, given that maybe MLS is never going to meet the expectations from a linear broadcaster that's been set out, go completely streaming, be on one consolidated streaming package, make it an add-on, right? Like they were discussing, we've talked about with the Premier League potentially. Maybe you pay $69.99 a year to add on Amazon Prime for MLS or whatever the number would be, and it makes it cheaper. Like I read Chris Moore's article, that was part of the context of the discussion. It would become cheaper, and you'd be on you'd be in a window to the world if you're linked with Amazon. So that was when this person said it to me, I thought it was ridiculous, and as he talked me through it, I thought, you know. Well, maybe that's what they need, but I don't know that they would think outside the box like that, Chris, but it was a really interesting suggestion. Not just put carve-out games like the Premier League has and like the NFL has and like the PGA Tour did at one time with Amazon. Put the whole thing there and forget linear broadcasters.
It would make things a lot easier in some ways, though. But then you look at the numbers of people subscribing that would subscribe to that. And, I mean, look at the viewing numbers for some of these games nationally. And it's, you mean, 100,000 people watching a game on FS1, or if it's 150,000, sometimes, if you're lucky, 200 to 250,000 people watching the game. So it's not big numbers. And if you're Amazon, I guess it depends what the cost is to get those rights. But whoever is, whether it's Apple TV Plus or Fubo TV, I mean, those are the companies that have more the money, are probably more willing to spend, more willing to gamble. And maybe it'll happen, something
like
that.
And this person's premise was also partly predicated on the fact that he thinks it's not in the interest of American soccer and the growth of American soccer for American soccer to be off of linear television completely. But he thinks, in light of the fact that U.S. soccer did do a deal with Turner, yes, we know every game will be on HBO Max or Discovery Plus, and it's only going to be a limited number of games on cable, or maybe half the games on cable. There's still going to be half the games on cable. So he said, okay, we don't have this doomsday scenario where American soccer is completely off linear television and European soccer is still on your linear television. The U.S. national team, men's and women's national team, will be on Turner, will be on TNT and TBS for the next 8 years, even if it's only 10 or 12 matches a year. So we don't have to depend on MLS to keep us as American soccer on linear television. That was kind of an interesting perspective also, that maybe the U.S. deal gives MLS this leverage. But I don't think they'll do it ultimately. I don't think they're even thinking that, honestly.
Yeah, on the Spanish language side, I'm definitely more buoyant on that side, more positive in terms of especially the League's Cup angle, and having access to watching a lot of these teams from Liga MX, probably beating up on the MLS teams. And that side of the fence on the Spanish language side, I can imagine Univision, especially with their new app that they have coming out, VIX Plus, which is going to be a streaming app, as well as their over-the-air coverage. Yes, I can see them getting involved big time on that. But then again, for MLS, like you said before earlier, Kartik, what about the English component of that? And if you have an ESPN that's maybe offering less money than Univision, perhaps, but also wants to get the English language and the Spanish language, you might, but you don't want to cut Univision out of the deal too. And Univision doesn't have an English language partner. So it's a tricky situation where MLS is at. And to me, this is reality slapping MLS in the face right now, because this is the reality of MLS in the market trying to sell their own media rights. And it's not combined with U.S. soccer. And in the past, it has been. And when it's been combined with U.S. soccer, it was an easier pill to swallow. But now this is MLS on their own, trying to sell their media rights. And what they've done, Kartik, it's kind of like buying a car. When you go to buy a car, you just want to buy the car. But what MLS has done in order to increase the amount of money, that the value of these rights, it's not just MLS, but you mean you've got MLS games, MLS Next Pro games, you've got local rights. It's a lot of media involved in this deal. And it's like buying a car, and they're throwing in like a free car wash. We'll give you oil changes. We'll give you tire rotation. We're throwing all these things in that you may not really need or want, but we're trying to give you that so that it gives you kind of a greater perceived value of the amount of money that you're spending. It'll be interesting, Kartik, to see what MLS does here if they do delay this rights bidding, because Don Garber said this deal will be done and announced by the end of Q1 2022. Like you said, we're a week away from that, and I don't see this being resolved that quickly. So maybe they'll come up with a new plan, or maybe they'll just delay it. But to me, if I'm MLS, I'm hoping that Fubo TV cashes in, or HBO Max cashes in, but all these streaming services get into kind of a bidding war. But it's a bidding war over a product that is decent, but is not going to give you massive ratings. So that really MLS has boxed themselves in. And I think in terms of them waiting until this period in time where they've delayed, they've made a mistake. They should have been trying to sell those rights last year, during kind of the, I mean, not waiting till every single other major soccer partner, soccer league or confederation has sold their rights, because I think right now they're in a tough spot. All right, Kartik, just one, or actually two more things in the news section here too. HBO Max, who are interested in MLS rights, we know that, but they're merging with Discovery, and Discovery has their own streaming service, which is Discovery Plus. Well, the news this past week is that they will be bundled and then merged into a single app. Now, Discovery Plus content plus HBO Max content, and if it's a single app, whatever it would be called, would be a very strong streaming service in terms of all the content that they have. And at the same time, too, they're looking to have sports being available, too. So MLS would be a good fit for that. But like you said, Kartik, too, in terms of the process of those companies merging and all finalizing all those details, that may not happen till April. So maybe then MLS says, you know, quietly, they say, okay, we've delayed it slightly and we're going to hopefully announce a winner by the end of Q2. And maybe then that's more in line with HBO Max and Discovery Plus, kind of that side of the fence where they can come in with a more concrete offer.
Yeah, and here's the advantage of that. We mentioned the U.S. deal has now been split, but the U.S. will be on HBO Max and presumably the merged app, right? HBO Max, Discovery Plus. It's already been announced, 20-plus U.S. men's and women's national team matches a year starting in 2023 for the next 8 years on HBO Max. So then you have cross-promotional opportunities once again, like you have now, even though the packages are separate and maybe the money isn't what either side would have wanted. Although I think the U.S. is happy with their deal from what I can hear from the Federation. They believe they're going to negotiate a Spanish language deal with Univision, which is going to take them well above the number they were getting from some as part of the last deal. So the combined Turner plus Univision deals for U.S. soccer expected, that's the key word, based on my sourcing, to be much higher than what they got from some on an annual basis as part of the previous deal. But the cross-promotional opportunities will be there, Chris, which I think is good for both MLS and U.S. soccer. That was the one positive, I think, of the Sum Bundle deal in the past.
So this past week, Kartik was at SoccerX and Sportel America in Miami, meeting with a lot of executives and sitting in on conferences and learning more about kind of what's happening inside the business. Myself, I was on vacation, like a much needed vacation. And while I was on vacation, on the way back, I was hearing all this scuttlebutt. I was hearing about, hey, daylight savings time, it's been made permanent. It's happening. It's a done deal. Well, it's not a done deal, but can you explain what's happening here and how this could impact European soccer?
Yeah, so there is a push among, and it's been going on for many years. One of the leaders of it has been Marco Rubio, the Republican senator from here in Florida, to remove daylight savings time and keep the U.S. on the natural clock. Now, what is the natural clock? It is the clock we are under now at this very moment on Friday. Well, okay, so we won't be under, the difference with Europe will not be the same when some of you guys listen to this podcast. Jeez, this is what makes it so awful. But it's the 4-hour difference with the UK, basically in layman's terms, 4-hour difference with the UK, 5-hour difference with Central European time, and minus an hour with everyone else. And that would be for every time zone in the U.S. So Pacific time zone, instead of being 8 hours behind the U.K., would be 7 on a permanent basis. So during half the year. Sorry, not on a permanent basis, but during half the year. So basically, it would really impact viewership, I think, for European football, particularly for you, those of you on the West Coast. You could get up an hour later, and for everybody on the East Coast, too. So from late October through late March, the U.S. would only be 4 hours behind the U.K., 5 hours behind Germany, Italy, France, Spain.
Which, if you're NBC, Kartik, NBC is probably the one that's probably most interested in this. You're probably saying, like, hey, make it happen, because, you mean, having games kick off at, say, 8:30 a.m. Eastern on a Saturday instead of a 7:30, and so on and so forth. Even midweek games, like 3:45 Eastern instead of 2:45 Eastern. It makes it more attractive to broadcasters of European football.
I tell you what, it's so much. Okay, so because you have the same issue with kids in school, Chris, the Champions League has become, I know I've denigrated the competition because it's a cup competition, and I've said, look, I don't like cup competitions so much as I like leagues. That is correct, and I think cups are crapshoots. But part of the problem is drop-off and pick-up of school children, right? So I cannot watch the first 30 to 45 minutes of most Champions League matches or midweek Premier League Bundesliga fixtures, that Friday Bundesliga fixture, which is always at the same time, because of the time difference in this country and when those kick off. That would actually eliminate that now for much of the year, right? It would kick off later. It was a great pleasure. We're recording this on Friday. It was a great pleasure to be able to watch all the European qualifiers simultaneously without interruption between ESPN Plus and ESPN 2 on linear yesterday, the European playoffs, kicking off all at the same time, and there was no school conflict. So I think that hour later for some of us, now maybe for others it's worse, right, because you're driving home from the office in that period, right? You could finish the matches now if it's on the Eastern time zone, 2:45 to 4:45 or so. I think in terms of the weekend, there's a huge advantage, right? Particularly for NBC. I think they would benefit the most because it's the Premier League that really has those early kickoff times. And Paramount Plus also with Serie A, or whoever has the Serie A rights down the road, because Serie A has some very early kickoff times too. Serie A has staggered kickoffs throughout both days, but they have some very, they don't have the collection of matches at one kickoff time like Germany and England does, the traditional 3:00 in England and 3:30 in Germany. But they have some very early kickoff times, which are difficult for U.S. viewers.
So can't take, so I'm still catching up after being out, but so the Senate has passed it, but the House of Representatives will review it and then will consider it?
Yes, correct. And then the president would have to sign it. I think this is going to happen at some point. There's more and more, you even see it on social media, right, Chris? More and more people are talking about, why do we change the clocks? It's stupid. And there's been also, as the world has gotten more integrated, I mean, I always bash the United States for being very isolated and the splendid isolationism because of the oceans, and U.S. always has to do things differently, which is true. But there are also people who say, why does the U.S. change its clock at a different time, both in the fall and the spring, than the rest of the world, right? Why does the U.S. change their clocks 3 weeks before the rest of the world in the fall, in the spring, and like several weeks after the rest of the world in the fall? It makes no sense. So there's been more and more conversation about this the last few years. I know some people mock it as trivial and say, oh, it's not a real world problem. But it kind of is, because when your economies are integrated with the rest of the world, it's become very, very inconvenient for a lot of business people and for people like us who are in this sport, which is a global sport. And then also, quite frankly, the daylight savings time does not have the utility anymore in terms of energy savings, et cetera. A lot of people would argue that it once did. So I think it's going to happen. Whether it happens this year or it happens 3-4 years from now, it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm ready for, like, if that happens, Kartik, then the next thing that should happen is Mother's Day. Mother's Day should be on the same day in the United States as in the UK. It's at different days of the year by several months. So, all right, let's move on to listener mailbag. First up is Daniel talking about the Premier League. He says, hi, guys. I have a question about the Premier League coverage. How much would you pay for Peacock if you were guaranteed they'd show every Premier League match, with the cost of a subscription TV package, cable, and Peacock? The one thing the other leagues get right that Peacock doesn't is the ability to watch every game in the league via one service. All La Liga and Bundesliga games are on ESPN Plus. Same for Serie A and Champions League on Paramount Plus. Right now, Peacock is $4.99 a month, but you're not guaranteed every match. How much would you pay if you knew that you'd get every match? I'd pay double the current price, maybe even more. It's a gamble week to week. Where are you going to find the games? Just think how many subscribers would sign up for Peacock if they knew they had that guarantee. I certainly would do it. Love your podcast. Keep up the great work. So, Daniel, I would first say that this is done on purpose. This is done on purpose that you can't get every single game on Peacock. It's not a coincidence that this is so, and they do it on purpose. They want you to subscribe to a cable TV package or satellite package or a streaming package that has cable TV stations and Peacock. So they get to kind of double dip and get money from you on both sides. But in a ideal world, Kartik, in a dream world, maybe it'll happen someday. How much would you pay if you had to subscribe for the whole entire season? How much would you be willing to pay to get every single Premier League match via Peacock?
$119 a year. That was the number that has always popped into my mind, and I think that would increase the profit margin for the Peacock app. But keep in mind, Comcast is a cable company. So it's very different than the ownership of Viacom, CBS. They call themselves Paramount now. They've rebranded. But the CBS ownership, the ESPN ownership, the ownership of Turner, HBO, those are, although obviously Warner Media has a huge cable component also. But Comcast's primary business has been cable. So cable and internet. So it's that's really the reason.
Yeah, 119. I was thinking in my mind before you mentioned that. Mine was $100. $100 a season, every single game. I'm happy. And then you multiply that by, the hundreds of thousands, if not, low millions of people that would be interested in signing up for that legally with really good quality streaming. Greg goes on to say about NBC, I'm also surprised by how half-assed the Peacock coverage has been. I wonder if it's not just about the front of the camera talent they have, but behind the camera resources, such as producers, cameras, lighting, sound, editors, research, etc. Maybe they're stretched thin with the Olympics, Paralympics, golf, and are needing to cycle people with days off. Rebecca wasn't on recently. She's been working straight through the Olympics to the Premier League weekend after. Maybe it's all that they can do to get even a Peacock schedule on air. And Greg, yeah, it seems that way. It seems that way, definitely. It would be good if they actually kind of were upfront about that and said, like, hey, here's what's happening. Here's why we have kind of change to our way that we're covering games. We're still covering all the games. You still have access to all of them. But here's why you're not seeing as many of the familiar faces or the high level of coverage that we've had in the past. And it's because of this and that. They've never really explained that. It would help the viewers, I think, as well as the media. In regards to MLS TV ratings, Dave says, I enjoyed your discussion of ESPN ratings as the Sunday evolved, talking about what the ratings were for ESPN in the morning with SportsCenter and going through the day and how there's the drop-off with MLS. And then right after MLS is over, then it picks up again. It is telling that there is a very significant drop when MLS starts and a very significant rise when it ends. Your idea about ESPN Plus or other streaming potentially being a better home for MLS makes sense. I suspect MLS games may tend to hold more local or regional appeal than national interest. In Kartik, this goes back to what you were saying too about maybe Amazon Prime or streaming service just taking everything. In some ways, where MLS is at, it does make sense because you would have access to all the games. You wouldn't have to try to figure out how to jump through all these hoodles. And you'd have everything rather than trying to have to subscribe to three or four different services on TV or streaming.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is, again, why the person made the argument they made to me, because I was talking to this person who does have knowledge of what's going on with MLS and the broadcast media situation and the rights. And he told me, quite frankly, he thinks this is a solution. And he had read the article on World Soccer Talk by Chris Moore. And that was why he was reaching out saying, look, MLS is more expensive now. And even if they kept some sort of status quo, eventually, as you have a world of conscious cord cutters and your demographic tends to skew younger, you're going to have people who miss out. And the current model hasn't worked to grow the television footprint and the numbers as much as they have promised broadcasters, as we've talked about. So that was why he made the argument. When he told me at first, I thought it was ridiculous. And as he talked me through it, I was like, I don't think MLS will do this, but it might make sense. It might be the gamble. It might be the long ball they need to play to eke out a draw here.
Well, that's the thing, though, too, Kartik, because you look at, say, the Premier League is just one example, and you look at, so they're getting, just from NBC and Comcast alone, starting next season, roughly about $460 million a year. But then you look at MLS with what they're getting currently, which is $60 million a year. $60 million a year, if the revenue that MLS got was primarily from television. Now, the Premier League, most of the revenue they get is from television. That's the number one driver of revenue for the Premier League. For MLS, it's not. But if MLS had to just depend solely on TV revenue in terms of staying in business, they'd be out of business. And the reason that they're in this situation right now is because of the expansion fees they've been getting for all these new teams being added to the different markets. And that's giving them large amounts of money to go ahead and reinvest in the league in terms of the players and the owners, etc. So this is imperative that MLS gets a major... Because at some point, the expansion cities are going to run out. And it's going to be, okay, look, we've got teams in every major market in North America for MLS. And yes, we have second division and third division. But I mean, really, the first division, we've kind of maxed out. And at that point, they want to kind of cash in and get the TV revenue. Well, that cash in and get the TV revenue, that point is now. And it's not happening under the current deal and what they're expecting. So again, MLS has really boxed themselves in here with a really tough situation. It'll be interesting to see how they get out of this. David goes on to talk about MLS TV ratings. And he says, the only way you will see viewer numbers improve is if the U.S. men's national team players become the stars of the league. In no uncertain terms, there are no superstar American players in Major League Soccer. And when MLS teams choose to sell their best young American players, there is no star power to attract casual fans. The soccer is getting better, but still at English championship level. At some point, you should do a podcast talking about the 5 to 6 best players on each team. The casual fan has no connection to any of the players. Now, I'd say that if you, again, if you're an LA Galaxy fan or LAFC fan and you go to the games week in, week out, you know those players intimately. But from a national perspective, if you're tuning in to an MLS game on any given weekend and you're a casual fan, you watch MLS now and again, but you're not watching every single game, you look at those players and you go, okay, I don't know these guys. I mean, I might know one or two of these players, but for the most part, these are players that are not at a high caliber level. So I think David's point is very, very precise there. Mercator says, the MLS numbers are devastating. No excuse. The ESPN numbers throughout the day are enough for me to throw in the towel. And I'm a football fan. I'm a soccer fan, not a Mickey Mouse executive. I think the real cause is the Premier League and the time zone. Premier League fans in the US are all generally non-Spanish-speaking football fans, soccer fans, who would otherwise be watching the MLS. Most of the big US players play in Europe. The time zone is also not ideal. It puts MLS in direct competition with the big US sports and with Premier League and other European leagues in the mornings. I just can't justify watching an MLS game where my city isn't involved. By the time they play in the evening or even later that night, I've seen 2 to 3 games in the morning usually. And by afternoon or evening, I have to attend to the rest of my life. JP says, regarding MLS ratings, it's rather simple. The interest is more regional, local, instead of national. On top of that, that local support is probably the fourth on the totem pole, or third or fifth, depending on the market, of interest in that particular region. I think JP's referring to other sports teams in that town. So if it's NFL, basketball, NHL, etc. Regular season national broadcasts are never going to be huge. Chris Guardino says, I wanted to let you guys know that Apple TV Plus gained the rights to stream Friday night Major League Baseball games recently. With this in mind, do you see Apple TV Plus getting more involved in soccer in the future? I think Kartik, for me, they're about 6 months too late. They could have gotten the Premier League rights if they were ready for it and committed to it. Perhaps they could have gotten La Liga, so maybe they can get MLS rights, but I don't know. To me, I think that they hold off and wait for the next major deal and then kind of go in big then. Robert says, I'm sending you this email because you talked not long ago about how high MLS ticket prices were And my shock at checking out Charlotte FC single game tickets, I was thinking about going to see the game against Miami and then maybe a game in the fall. Not much chance of that. Their cheapest price is $55 for not very good seats. For a seat where I would like to be, you were talking $120. Most of the good seats around $150 to $200. They go up to $500 and a high of $950. To compare, Seattle charges $33 for the cheapest seats to $122. There are some over $200. But for smaller stadiums like Austin FC, they run from $37 to $728, with most around $150. I was surprised that New York Red Bull tickets ran in the $20 to $30 range for many of their seats, then up to $332 for the best. They must be working to attract bigger crowds. The upper decks in Charlotte and Seattle are only open after the lower 32,000 to 38,000 are sold. But I would rather watch a game on TV than trying to see the game up there. Robert, he says, I'm sticking with the TV. And Kartik, that's something too. I know that you went to a couple of US Open games this week, but I mean, and COVID has happened, right? But I mean, in an average year, if you go back, say, I don't know, 10 years ago, how many games, I mean, some of these you would have been working, but 10 years ago, how many games on average were you watching in person in an average year, roughly?
40 or so.
Wow. Yeah. And for me, it might have been, I don't know, maybe 12 or so. Like these days, it's been a long time since I've gone to a game in person.
This was the first competitive official match I've gone to since 2019. The Open Cup matches this weekend. This week.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those things that you look at the prices and you look at, like, say, $6.99 for ESPN Plus, and you get, you know, all those leagues, right? And then you look at the price just for parking. A lot of these MLS clubs charge like $30 for parking. And you look at the ticket prices for these teams, you go like, holy cow.
Granted, I've gone to very few MLS games. And when I say 40, they were mostly MLS or USL or NPSL or PDL matches, right? Very few. I've gone to very, very few MLS games in the last 20 years and haven't been to one now. And I haven't been to an MLS match since 2016 at this point.
Champions League. Martin in Colorado says CBS's Champions League studio coverage featured an all-female analysis segment recently, which was fine with no glaring errors nor brilliant insights, so can't really fault it. My question is, was this a one-off for Women's Month this March or something they plan to use more often? And if that's not the case, why not an analysis group composed of all black experts for Black History Month in February? I'm all for trying new things and thought that was fine, but have to admit the actual female voice, not what they say, sometimes throws me on telecasts just because I grew up with all male sports voices. As always, great podcast, guys. Gene says, in regards to the Champions League, he says, hey guys, just noticed some of the Champions League TV ratings on CBS throughout the week. Every game has had over 700,000 viewers, with two games over 800,000 viewers. These ratings were higher than Sunday NHL games on ABC and pretty much in line with college basketball games that also aired weekdays on ESPN. What are your thoughts on the CBS ratings, and do you see more games other than the final being on CBS throughout the rest of the tournament? And Gene, I don't have it in front of me, but I know that CBS is planning on having a bunch more games from the Champions League for these knockout stages. If you go to worldsoccertalk.com, you have the Champions League TV schedule there, which has all of the games listed that are going to be on CBS. And you can also get the Soccer TV Schedules app through Apple or Android, and that has from us, and that has all of the ratings too, the actual listings too. On a different note, Chris talks about betting. Chris says, a few nights ago while watching a NHL game on TNT, I noticed a commercial from DraftKings that was heavily promoting betting during the game called In-Game Betting and their app. This is something that I have noticed more and more ever since sports betting was legalized in my state of Washington last year. These ads often appear before and during games to encourage people to bet on the game they are watching. With that in mind, do you think that we will see more ads from DraftKings and other sports betting companies during Premier League or Champions League matches, especially in states where sports betting is legal? What do you think, Kartik?
It's thrown me. Even NBC's Premier League coverage, and I noticed it this week on, what was it, on La Liga coverage or something on ESPN. The betting metrics that they've now integrated into the coverage, really, I just am not accustomed to it. It's not something I don't want to say I'm not comfortable with it, but it's just something I'm not interested in, and it kind of to me is a waste of analysis. But I think you're going to see more ads from DraftKings and FanDuel and all these things in Premier League and Champions League matches.
Yeah, for a lot of listeners who have listened to this podcast for a long time, you know that. Myself personally, I don't watch many other sports. I watch soccer almost exclusively, not because I'm a snob or anything, but just because, you mean, it's a game I love. There's so many games on that, you mean, I have no time to watch NFL or college football or basketball or any of these other sports. I've got so much soccer going on, I just don't have time. And I love soccer. It's my life. It always has been. It's my passion, and I consider myself a massive soccer fan. However, now and again, I'll tune in. Like yesterday when I was watching, I think, the Portugal-Turkey game. Right after the game was over, they switched to, I think, SportsCenter, and then gave a couple of the headlines, what's happening. And then they started talking about just discussion about, I don't know, NBA or whatever it was. Some American sports. I had it on in the background. But the discussion was not a discussion about players, transfers, you know, or whatever, you mean, injuries or whatever. It was all prefaced, all talking about betting. Well, this one has a, you mean, all the odds and all that. And so it's now at this point in time kind of embedded so much into just even discussion and analysis that it is intertwined. And I think on a state-by-state basis, you will see, yeah, absolutely, Chris, you will see betting companies advertising Premier League and Champions League matches, encouraging you to place bets in the game, like who's going to score the next goal, who's going to get yellow carded, whatever it may be. It's here to stay. It's not going away. And as more and more states legalize it, it's going to happen. It's even gotten to the point too, I think, if I'm not sure if you've noticed, but Stu Holden now is the betting guy at Fox Sports. So if you look at Stu Holden's kind of what he talks about on Twitter or some of the things he does for Fox, it's a lot of it's focused around betting. And the same thing happens with CBS Sports. CBS Sports has, oh gosh, who is it, Kartik, on the soccer side now, where when he's on CBS Sports HQ every single time, it's all about betting. That's the only reason he's coming on the show, is just
to talk. Oh, yeah, betting. That was the other thing that I was thinking of in terms of just betting being in my face with CBS Sports HQ, and I'm blanking out who it is. But
Yeah. Which is a familiar name and familiar face, but I, like you, Kartik, I'm tired of all these World Cup qualifiers. My brain is not flying on all cylinders. But anyway, but yeah, it's here to stay. It's going to happen more and more. And if you're in a state where it's legalized, you will see it big time. And if you're not in that state yet, it's going to happen real soon. Last but not least, Raymond talks about Liga MX. He says, why doesn't the US media, when they talk about the Mexican national team, imply one of the reasons why the national team is so weak is because of the constant Americanization of their league? I think the partnership with some helps the pockets of Mexican soccer, but not when it comes to player development. Would you agree? And recording this on Friday and then reflecting back on Mexico's performance against the United States and Azteca, what's happened to Mexico, Kartik?
I think it's a multi-year thing. I mean, it's something they were – I think Juan Carlos Osorio, in spite of how things ended with him, they punched a bit above their weight in that period. I think Mexico has had a real – problem in terms of just their flair players and their ability to turn superior possession into goals in CONCACAF now going back to the cycle for the 2014 World Cup. And they've actually had hiccups in qualifying in every cycle, right? They had major hiccups in the 2010 cycle and had to make a couple of coaching changes during the course of that cycle to end up, they finished second in the hex to the U.S., but had trouble getting out of the first qualifying group. And they'd had trouble even prior to that and had cycled through coaches and had to make a change, Sven-Göran Eriksson getting fired in the middle of the hex. And I think it's just a long-term thing where Mexico has not been this dominant power producing flair players and producing really high-end guys that it can excel at top European clubs. They've done great in the Portuguese league and the Dutch league. Fantastic. I mean, Mexico has exported maybe more impact players to those leagues than just about any nation, but that have excelled at elite level clubs in a long time since Rafa Márquez and a few others. Think about it. Canada has guys playing, arguably many guys playing as elite, if not a more elite level than Mexico. Costa Rica has had that. Costa Rica and Keylor Navas has had maybe the standout player in this region the last 10 years. And the U.S. now has elevated where they're at better clubs. So, and you even see how it went for Irving Lozano when he went to a bigger club, right? You know, there's been these sorts of hiccups for Mexican players. Although, at the same time, they're good. They're like the U.S. used to be. Like, you talk about the Mexican players on Betis. They've kept that club competitive, like the way American players used to keep Fulham very competitive. So there's still like a scrappy, gritty side to them that means they will continue to qualify for major tournaments, but they're just not elite.
I think part of it, though, too, Kartik, is you look at Azteca on Thursday night, and yes, it was a reduced capacity. Roughly, it was supposed to be about 50,000 in an 87,000 capacity stadium. And yes, there were issues with traffic and fans getting to the stadium late or just not even getting into the stadium. But the atmosphere in that stadium was blah. It was kind of just flat. And you look at Mexico, when Mexico plays unless it's a World Cup qualifier at home, they play almost all their friendlies in the United States. So, you mean, I'm sure that's had an impact on the Mexican passion from their fans for their teams, for their players. You mean, it's so rare that these Mexican national team fans get to see their own team in their own country, unless it's a World Cup qualifier where it has to be played at home. So I think in some ways that might have an impact too, where the Mexican national team fans in Mexico must feel a little bit disenfranchised with their team and not feel the connection that they've had in previous decades. And maybe that plays into it a little bit too, where you have a flat noise in the crowds. There's a lot of issues in terms of kind of... You mean that the Mexican fans are being told, you mean they cannot say certain things, which is correct, that they shouldn't be doing that. But there's a lot of restrictions placed on them. It's not the wild and crazy Mexico fans that we've known in the past before, too, in terms of like packed stadiums. And yes, COVID has a role in this, too. But yeah, Raymond's comment about he thinks that the partnership with some helps the pockets of Mexican soccer, but kind of hurts on the player development side. I tend to agree with that too. It's really, they've cashed in, but they've lost a lot too at the same time. You look back at the Olympics, Kartik, the Olympics in London, Mexico won it, right? They look great. They had a great team. So there's definitely a disconnect there, and it's certainly an issue. And there's no guarantee that Mexico will even qualify for this World Cup.
That used to be the case with the U.S. The U.S. used to do really well at the youth national team level and not as well at the senior national team level. Now the U.S. doesn't do particularly well at either level, although it looks like maybe senior national team is elevating again, and the youth national teams really haven't. So that's actually – I can understand that disconnect. Nigeria is the classic example of that, like Mexico, Chris. They've won all kinds of things at the youth level. And even in Europe, we see until recently that there was it wasn't really an accurate predictor of what would happen in the future. But then we saw the core of Germany's 2014 World Cup team won the 2009 Euro under 21s, and then France, the core of their 2018 World Cup team, won a World Youth or U20 World Cup. So now you're beginning to see the correlation in Europe. And then England, obviously, right, wins the under 17 and under 20 World Cup in the same year, and that the core of that team is now got to the Euro finals and to have a World Cup to look forward to.
So looking ahead to this weekend, Kartik, what's your game to watch?
I'm really excited about the fact that WSL is going to have a game on NBC Linear. We're not sure the game yet, or at least I'm not sure the game yet. It might be tape delayed, but 1 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. But Chris, this is another example of a broadcaster after they lose the rights to a property. We know the WSL is moving to CBS next year. After they lose the rights to the property, beginning to showcase the property more. We saw it with ESPN with Serie A last year. We've seen it in some other cases that I'm blanking out on. You could even argue Fox, if they're not interested in MLS anymore, showcasing MLS early this season. This is another example of that. A broadcaster losing a property and then showcasing the property on Linear, maybe taking advantage of whatever left they have from that property to make as much money in advertising as they can. I mean, it was funny. It was the week after the Serie A rights were lost by ESPN to CBS that suddenly ESPN put a game on ABC, announced they were putting a game on ABC. So this feels very similar, but I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that, too, is just timing. As far as scheduling, they might schedule these games, the broadcast windows out months in advance, and it just happens by coincidence where some of these games are on big TV, even after they've lost the rights. But my game to watch this weekend, really kind of a must win for the United States, is US against Panama Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern on FS1, Unomas and Tuduene. We've got Carl Fansler is going to be there reporting from the stadium, so we're going to get some good coverage out of him. But this is a big game. I mean, the US, if they can get the win there, should be sitting comfortably, may even qualify depending on other results. And even if they don't qualify on Sunday night, should put them in a really good spot to qualify on Wednesday and clinch that. But it's a big game. It's a big game. And then, listeners, if you've got something that you want to ask us, we'd love to read your comments out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, heading into a big weekend of World Cup qualifiers, women's football, lower division soccer, and a whole lot more. What are you going to do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.